All right, welcome to the Strongpreneur Podcast. I'm Tom Reber, and today I'm excited to be hanging out with my new friend, Bernie, here. How you doing, Bernie?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Hey, so we met earlier in 2016, formally, at an industry event in the painting industry through a mutual friend and guest that's been on this show before, Tom Lopatowski. And, you know, you and I have kind of played email and email tag and some things like that, and finally worked out a time to be able to, I think, do what you and I both do best, and that's come together and use our experiences as coaches and consultants and entrepreneurs and business owners to have a conversation and help contractors. So I'm excited for our time here today, man. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Well, thanks. I'm excited too. So I think it'll be great.
Yeah. So tell us, man, you're an author, you're an entrepreneur, you got a lot of things going. What, give us a minute or two on who you are and where you come from and as it pertains to, you know, things we're going to talk about today.
Sure. Well, I started my own business first time out back in 98. So I've been a long time entrepreneur, started my own business, and I ran into the problem that virtually every small business owner that starts up runs into, which was I had failed to figure out where the clients were going to come from. And so without getting into all the nitty gritty, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how I was going to get more leads and more clients, and learned an awful lot about marketing and sales. And a lot of what I learned, I wasn't really all that thrilled with, because I'm really not an arm twisting, hard nosed kind of sales guy. And so it took me quite a while to figure out a sales process that I was comfortable with, that I could use that actually worked. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am today. And what I do today is I work with contractors in a number of different niches, basically helping them to fix their sales process, by which I mean helping them to figure out how to convert more of their leads and prospects into paying clients.
Well, that's the name of the game, isn't it? Got to have deposits. So
yep, gotta have that.
So you earlier you talked about you needed to figure out where the clients were going to come from. So how would you answer that question today? If say I'm a young contractor, I'm new to the game, and I go, Bernie, where are my clients going to come from? How do you answer that?
Well, I guess it would depend on exactly where they are. If it's a young contractor who's literally just starting out and doesn't have any lead flow whatsoever, then of course the first step is going to have to be lead generation. So, I mean, you got to have a certain amount of lead flow just to get the ball rolling. So, I would start with, in the year 2016, in the good old US of A, you're not a business if you don't have a website. So you got to have a website. It's got to look halfway decent. And it's got to be optimized. And I would start with that. You and I differ a little bit, I know, from our previous conversations. You're an online guy. You prefer to go to social media and things along those lines, and that's great, and that can definitely work. I'm a little bit more old school in my thinking, and so I tend to rely more on direct mail. For a young guy just starting out, I'd probably recommend putting some money into at least a few thousand dollars into a 6 or 12 month postcard campaign to a targeted list, finding exactly the prospect that fits what they're looking for, and work a process from there. On the flip side, if the guy you're talking about is already under his own steam, has a little bit of lead flow, has some clientele, is finding that they are spending a lot of time making presentations and not selling enough of their clients, then I think a very different approach is needed. And that's actually what I wanted to talk about today. For somebody like that, let's say maybe they've reached 300, 400, 500,000, or even more, 800 to $1 million in revenue, and they're really just looking for a way to get to that next level. The first thing that I would tell that person to do is to focus on their sales process. And there's a really good reason for that. Without the benefit of a PowerPoint or anything, it mm-hmm. might be a little difficult to follow, but real briefly, let's just say you've got somebody, they've got 60 leads coming in a month, okay? Their closing ratio is 30%, all right? Meaning they close 3 out of 10, so they land 18 jobs, And, you know, if their average sale is $3,500, then that translates into annual revenue of about $756,000. Okay. So $750,000. If we take that same guy and we move his closing ratio up by just 10 points, mm-hmm. right? So in other words, instead of selling 3 out of 10, we're now selling 4 out of 10 of their prospects. They land not 18, but 24 jobs, same average sale, okay? And that translates into annual revenue of $1,008,000. So just over, a tick over $1 million. So you've just by moving that one number, moving the needle just a little bit, you're taking that person from $750,000 up to $1 million of revenue, or a 33% increase in revenues. And, you know, that's huge. And so I think a lot of marketing people, a lot of sales trainers, they focus, in my opinion, a little bit too much on lead generation. They say, well, let's just get more leads, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you'll sell more in the end. Well, that translates usually into a heck of a lot of time spent making presentations, putting together proposals, delivering proposals, and so forth. And still, you know, if only 2 or 3 out of 10 are turning into sold business, you're really spending a lot of time. So I tend to focus, you know, once somebody's got a little bit of lead flow going, we really think the first thing they should focus on is their sales process.
No, that's good stuff. So let's camp on that. So what do you see when you start peeling back somebody's business and looking under the hood, conversations you're having and groups you speak to? What are you seeing that would you say are some of the most common mistakes or problems guys are making in their sales process?
That's a really good question. I see lots of different things, but I'd say the thing I see most consistently is that there's really no sales process at all. Right? Contractors and business people in general, I think, don't really understand where prospects are today. And what I mean by that is that prospects or buyers in general have been disappointed time and time again by things that they've been sold. You know, whether it be a car, an appliance, a home improvement project, clothes, shoes, a haircut, I mean, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. They've been disappointed over and over and over again. And it's to the point where when they're looking to shop for something, and particularly if in a situation like, you know, our clients deal with, which is they have to come to the house, they have to see what the deal is, they have to do a little analysis and gather some information about what they're looking for, the lay of the land, and all that. The prospect's main objective is to avoid being sold. Right? I mean, when they're telling themselves, the one thing I am not going to do today is buy anything. I'm mm-hmm. not going to be sold, and I'm not going to be disappointed yet again. Okay, and what most contractors do is, as soon as they get a call from a client that, you know, they say, "Hey, we need to get some painting done. We need our roof replaced. We need our driveway paved. We need some landscaping. You know, whatever it is," they say, "Great, I can come out on Tuesday at 7. Is that good? Great, see you then." Boom. Okay, they run out. And they jump immediately into sales mode, you know, and so they run headlong into the prospect's desire to not buy. So their desire is to sell, the prospect's desire is to not buy, and you've got conflict. Mm-hmm. And then they seem pushy because they want the person to buy or give them some indication that they're interested or something like that. So I think those two things are probably the biggest problems I see. No system for actually leading somebody through a sales process, and just jumping into sell mode before establishing any kind of credibility or trust with the prospect.
So for that person who doesn't, and I've always said, and I can't take credit because I heard it somewhere else. So, but if you don't have a process, then you're on the client's process. And when you have 100 different leads and, you know, a month or whatever it is, you're basically on 100 different systems that make no sense and don't benefit anybody. So, so you have to take control.
This way. Yeah. If you don't have a system for selling, then you're on their system for not buying.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, the trade contractor listening right now, as he's cruising down the road in his truck on his way to an estimate, because I get a lot of people that are like, yeah, I listen to you when I'm driving around and stuff, obviously. So it's a podcast. Yeah. And so for that guy right now is just going, you know, man, I don't have a system. I know I don't have a system. I'm exactly what Bernie just said. You know, I run out there and I just kind of do my thing and whatever. What are some first steps that you would recommend that guy or girl taken right out of the gate to establish their own system?
They're going to have to establish a system real quick if they're on the way to their job, but to an estimate now. What I would say is that once – close their eyes when they get there. This is going to sound a little fuzzy to begin with, but then let me explain, okay?
All right.
I think they really need to change their mindset and their approach, all right? And what I mean by that is that our process, our approach is very different than your typical sales approach, all right? And my approach is that we have to actually allow them a process to buy, to make that decision to buy from us rather than us trying to sell, right? And the first way to do that is to go into this initial meeting with a very genuine, unauthentic desire to help that person to hire the right contractor for them, even if that means they're not going to hire you. Okay.
Yep.
That should be the number one thing going through their mind when they meet a prospect for the first time. Okay. And that might sound really counterintuitive, but I'm going to tell you that there's absolutely no question that if you go into a relationship at the outset with the desire just to help them to find the right contractor for them, you're going to end up selling way more than if you go into the relationship, right out the bat and say, I want to sell these guys. Okay. So if you think about, well, what do we have to do to help them find the right contractor for them? Right. Well, we have to create some processes for them to educate them in how to find the right contractor, what to look for, what to look out for when they're talking to other contractors, and to give them some answers about how we do things and how we work and how we don't work that really help them kind of figure out what the right fit is for them. And, you know, that whole process enables our hero in his truck on the way to an estimate right now to differentiate themselves, you know, just explaining their own processes. And, you know, here's how we do things. And you really need to compare that to how other people explain to you how they do things so that you can make sure that you're getting value for the money that you're about to invest in this project.
So that assumes at that point that your prospect is going to do their due diligence. And and what percentage of prospects do you think really do their homework when they get four or five guys running out there wasting their time, spinning their tires, you know, tap dancing, differentiating, and all this other stuff that you and I are talking about and we help people with? And what percentage of the prospect do you think is really doing their due diligence and comparing?
Well, see, now I have to back up a little bit because the scenario that you painted, Tom, is one of the guys I work with would never end up in that situation, okay? Mm-hmm. Because we would have already developed and provided some tools to the prospect before we ever went out and saw them, okay?
Sure.
And so we actually give them tools to help them analyze and evaluate the contractors that they're going to talk to.
Right.
Listen,
you and I, you know, we both have our systems and our processes that we help people with. So it's
right.
And I know that not everyone is a good fit for mine and not everyone's a good fit for yours, which is why I just, you know, I feel good about having you on here because the ultimate goal is to help contractors, you know, raise the bar in their industry, make more money, have a better life. you know, we do all of our stuff on the telephone pre-qualifying, and we have real open and honest conversations, and we don't go out to a home unless they already know about what it's going to cost and that we're going to have a decision when we get out there. Okay. So we, this isn't about me and my process. This is about you. And so I'm just saying, I'm totally on the same page with you about, you know, I don't believe a contractor should ever, ever set foot in a client's home unless they've had an open and honest discussion about things like money and expectations and stuff like that and how the decision's going to be made. So I'm sorry to hijack you there, but I just want to make sure that you know that I believe you and I are on the same page with a lot more than maybe we think we are. So,
oh, yeah. There's no question. Yeah, I absolutely believe you.
Yep.
That's true. So, and you know, I would add to that that one of the guys that anybody who works with, probably you or I, would never even bother going on an estimate where they know they're the client is going to see four or five other guys. I mean, that's not a prospect to me. That's a, hey, you know, that we may not be the right fit for you.
Sure.
But still, I mean, our guys do run into those situations. So we actually have a tool. It's a checklist of questions that that we give them to help them to help the prospect to evaluate and score every contractor that they're going to be talking to. So, and I mean, if there's no tool, then I would pick at least four or five things. I mean, in the scenario that you're describing, I would have that contractor go in and. Again, we're trying to help the prospect make the right decision for them, and so pick at least four or five things, right? That prospect ought to look for when they're figuring out who they're going to work for, and just you could verbally give them a checklist and say, now everybody you talk to, you know, make sure they do this, make sure they do that, make sure they have, you know, if licensing is required wherever, then we want them to be licensed, and here's why it's important to you that we always have to make sure that they understand why is it important. You know, anybody can say they have insurance, but who cares? I mean, why do I care as the buyer? Why should I care they have insurance? I don't know why I care, okay? You have to tell them, here's why it's important to you that they have insurance, okay? Because if somebody's up on a ladder and falls off the ladder and cracks their head, if they don't have the proper insurance, that's your responsibility now. And you don't want, you know, to be in that position. Are they financially stable? And, you know, why is that important? Well, you know, everybody's heard the horror stories about contractors who take a big deposit and then, you know, they run off with their money. They're not ever heard from again. So, so you always have to boil it back to why is it important to that prospect to look for contractors that do or don't do these certain things. Okay. And that's what I call establishing the buying criteria. If you want to kind of boil it back to a little more formal sales talk, okay. establishing the buying criteria is what, you know, what that would be. And you know, when you do that, it's couched in helping the client, and in fact, we are helping the client to make a better decision. But the truth, kind of the hidden, dirty secret, Tom, is that if the client follows the process that we outline in coming to a decision about who to use, then they'll knock everybody else out anyway, and we'll be the only one left standing. And so, you know, their choice is going to be us unless they're just committed to going with the lowest price. So.
Yeah. And like you gave in your example earlier, I mean, such a small move of the needle in closing rate can mean big bucks. And that's, you know, that's what I love about the contracting world in general is that we don't have to, you know, if I say we as a contractor, say I'm a contractor, I don't have to, I don't necessarily have to double my business to change my life, you know, where a lot of, you know, I, in years past, I worked with, you know, like gym owners and personal trainers, and you got to sell a ton of personal training sessions, you know, to really make a difference in the bottom line, where with the contracting world, we have these big chunks of money that we're working with. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, one 10% change in closing rate in the scenario you gave was, you know, what was it, another $300,000 or whatever of revenue coming in the door with the same amount of leads. So 100%, think it's super important to, you know, make the most of those leads that you have already coming in the business before you, you know, go out and try to feed more. I mean, why feed more leads into a broken process, right?
Exactly. So, you know, if you look at those numbers from a little different perspective, if you can improve your sales process and thereby sell your jobs at 10% higher than what you're selling them for now, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to mean for most contractors who are operating at 10% profit, if they're hopefully they're operating at 10%, okay, as an absolute minimum. But if they are, if they raise their prices 10%, that doubles profit, right?
Yep.
I mean, twice as much money goes to the bottom line. And so, you know, just by a slight improvement in your sales process, being able to sell your jobs at 10% more, you double your profits. I mean, that's a huge move of the needle right there. So, yeah.
So let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on charging for estimates?
My thoughts on charging for estimates is that it's the only way to go. I think most contractors don't have the guts to even try it.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Because nobody else is doing it. And, you know, they just, or they don't know how to implement a process like that.
So what do you tell that guy who deep down knows he should be charging, but he's afraid to? How would you help him?
Well, you know, I think I always revert back to what I know best, which is you set up a process to do it. You know, you say, here's our process. I mean, there has to be, you described just a moment ago, a process whereby you're going to have a conversation about price and expectations on the phone before you ever go to see someone, all right? Well, most of the guys who are listening to this are not going to have that process in place.
Right.
Well, in my opinion, that process has to be in place, or that step has to be in place in your process in order for you to be able to charge for the estimate. Right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, without that, if somebody calls up and says, hey, you know, I'm interested in having some siding and windows done. Okay, I can come out on Tuesday at 7. You know, we charge $250 for the estimate visit. Well, nobody else is charging for the visit. Well, we charge. Okay. I mean, that process doesn't work.
No.
You know, there has to be a step in there where you're having a meaningful conversation with them, at least gathering some information, you know, giving them something, and then and providing value and showing, demonstrating in some way that you're you know, worth working with before you go out, before you can sell the estimate, you know, that you're charging for. So,
you know, I've often felt that as an industry, we need to change our terminology and stop calling them estimates.
Yeah.
You know, because if you really look up the definition of an estimate, it's like, hey, this is a guess. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm estimating, you know, this is, and so, you know, somebody calls, I don't see the harm in changing the terminology and saying, somebody calls and goes, yeah, I want to get an estimate for my paint job. And you go, all right, well, let's clarify. Do you want a consultation or an estimate? Because our estimates are free and we could talk on the phone and I'll give you a range of what I think it'll cost and that's free. You know, but if you want me to come out there, you know, and give you a clear scope of work, you know, and a consultation on what needs to happen, you know, see, so I think it comes back to terminology. And so, you know, I always encourage people to ask a client what they mean or a prospect what they mean about, what do you mean when you say you want to get an estimate? What does that mean to you? And let them define it back to you. Well, we want you to come out and give us a price on what it's going to cost. Okay, well, that's a consultation. Now you're tapping into my 15, 20 years of brain power and education, you know, to problem solve for you. And again, that's not, you know, I'm quickly going through it, but I just think, you know, maybe we do a better job as an industry of defining certain things and using different terminology.
Yeah, I like that.
You probably read it. There's the E-Myth Contractor book.
Yeah.
A little tiny thing Michael Gerber wrote a long time ago. And I remember, I think he says, we don't do estimates, we give pricing promises, or something like that was the terminology that he used when I read it 10 years ago or whatever that was. You know, because that's really what it is. You go out there and you give somebody, quote unquote, the air quotes here, the proposal or the estimate, you know, and then you show up and do the work. You know, technically, if you're going to call it an estimate, you could change the price. you know.
And generally, that's and exactly
then,
what happens.
And then be an idiot contractor, right? So, so it's expectations to me and definitions and things like that.
That's good stuff, Tom. Sorry, I like that. I wrote that down.
Good, man. I appreciate that. So, all right. I know you have a lot to say about the hidden treasure in most businesses. And, you know, in your book, Upside Down, Inside Out, and Backwards Marketing for Trade Contractors.
Yeah.
You have a section where you're talking about the treasure buried in your business, mm-hmm. And how a lot of business owners are making that mistake of always looking for new customers.
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about how a contractor can sell more and take better care of, you know, the people that have already trusted them once.
Sure. You know, I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time talking about why the customers that have hired you before are better customers than, you know, trying to get new leads coming in the door. I mean, they already know you. They have a high level of trust in you if you've done a good job for them. I mean, I would equate that to referrals as well. So, you know, happy customers. Well, I always like to say happy customers come back. Delighted customers tell others about you. So, you know, I really believe, and it's been borne out by the clients that I've worked with and everybody else who's ever tested it, is that developing and nurturing relationships with the clients that you've that have hired you in the past is the single most profitable thing that you can do. And I think anybody, any business, and maybe especially contractors who don't invest some money in keeping that relationship fresh and current and reminding people that they're out there and reminding them that they're still doing great work and keeping in touch with them is making a huge mistake. And I mean, my advice, you know, going back to what we talked about at the very beginning, which is, you know, I mean, what to do if you're a young guy, just kind of getting things, getting feet on your ground. I would say as soon as you have any kind of meaningful base of clientele, is to start doing something to keep up with them on a regular basis, communicating with them. It could take the sort of traditional thing that people do is a newsletter of some kind. Here again, you and I probably differ. I'm guessing, Tom, I don't know exactly what you advise your clients to do. I tend to really suggest and recommend a paper and ink newsletter that gets sent out on a monthly basis. You might recommend an e-newsletter or something like that, but in any case, you know, you got to do something. You can take it to a whole different level, and there's tons of stuff in my book about this. And in fact, you know, why don't I just go ahead and say, anybody who wants a copy of my book, I'm happy to send it to you. We'll talk at the end, I'm sure, about how they can get a hold of me, email me, or whatever. But you know, you can buy it on Amazon for around $14 or $15. Amazon kind of changes the price whenever they feel like it, but you can get it free from me. So, but you know, there are any number of things you can do. I mean, on the simple end of things, you know, what about sending a postcard from your vacation to all of your clients? You know, you're going to Alaska, or you're going to Hawaii, or you're going to, you know, you're going to the Jersey Shore. It doesn't matter. Okay. Mm-hmm. You set up a postcard ahead of time. You get it all written, very simple. Hey, you know, I'm down here, you know, getting burned on the Jersey Shore, and it's all set up. And, you know, when you go, you drop it in the post office, and, you know, out it goes, and everybody gets a postcard from you. I mean, who else does that? You know, nobody else does that. And it's brilliant. Okay. Better yet, you could make an offer, you know, during, say, hey, I'm on vacation, I'm feeling really good. You know, if somebody is into making offers and things like that, doing that sort of thing, the postcard could make an offer. So stuff like that, you know, certainly holiday cards. We tend to recommend Thanksgiving cards. because Christmas is, you know, the Christmas holidays are just kind of overwhelming for everybody to get so much mail and stuff like that. That's, but I also think developing your own referral groups is a very powerful strategy. This is something that I've told, I don't know how many dozens of contractors. Only a very small handful have actually done this, but the ones who have done it, it has worked out tremendously well. So the idea is, without spending too much time, the idea is that, you know, you get together with a group of other contractors, or it doesn't have to be limited to contractors. It could include, you know, for instance, a auto mechanic, you know, a financial planner. I mean, what you're looking for is anybody who serves the same clientele that you do. And what you're going to do is you're going to get together on a monthly basis. And, you know, really, it's kind of like a mastermind group. Everybody goes around. I usually recommend a breakfast meeting once a month, you know, at a diner or someplace, a restaurant, where you can have a separate room and everybody gets 10 or 15 minutes to go around and talk about what's working in their business, what they might need help with. It doesn't have to be related to marketing or sales. Could be hiring somebody, firing somebody. They're having problems with their payroll company. I mean, it could be anything. Right. Okay. And what happens is, within a very short period of time, the trust level within that group really goes way up, and the referrals will start flowing. All right. You can kind of boost that whole idea by having a packet that each of the members of this group leave behind with everyone they see, okay, or maybe every client. So for instance, let's say there are eight members of this group. One of them is a remodeler. The other guy is a landscaper. They got a roofer. We have a paving contractor. You've got an auto mechanic, you know, a plumber and or HVAC guy. You know, a handyman. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so everybody has this packet, and it could be as simple as just a sheet of paper that says, hey, here are some other contractors or service providers that we know and trust. And it just has a little, you know, a very brief description of each of them, maybe the logo, contact information, and they just leave it behind. So the sheet that you have, Tom, includes everybody else's information. The sheet that I have includes everybody's except for mine. Okay, so everybody's sheet is kind of the same, but, you know, a little different in that it doesn't have our own information on it, obviously. So, and we just leave that behind. So the auto mechanic, every car he services, this little sheet is left in it. Okay, and I can tell you that the trust level out there in the public for trade contractors is so low that, you know, any kind of endorsement or what they might feel is, hey, this person's been vetted, or this person that I have at least some level of trust in because I've used them, tells me that they trust and rely upon these people. That's going to boost the number of leads you get, and that's what I call an endorsement or a recommendation strategy.
That's a phenomenal idea. And so, you're talking about a group I called or still call that I call those people influencers.
Yeah.
And so, because, you know, back in the day, you know, me and one company, he was a carpet guy. Painting and carpeting went hand in hand a lot of times, and we were both in hundreds of homes a year. And you know, I want to say, just from this one carpet guy, I was probably $200,000 a year in sales just from what you're talking about having. Now, we didn't have a formal group, but I just did the math when you were talking about your group of eight, and so that would be seven other people. And there's if each person generated you one lead a quarter, okay?
Yeah.
And you sold 40%. We go to that 40%. You would have 28 leads. You would end up with about 12 sales at that $3,500 that you were talking about. That's another $42,000 of revenue that's just coming in. And I think that's conservative, to the point that you shared about the trust factor. Because if somebody hires me, and then I hand them your card, Bernie, they know, people, you know, birds of a feather flock together, or whatever that saying is, right? So, you know, chances are I'm not going to be hanging around with some knucklehead, and they're immediately you're positioned at a higher level in their mind, and at that point it's your sale to lose.
Exactly.
So
28 yeah. leads, you probably sell far more than 12.
Exactly.
Your closing ratio is going to be way higher.
Yep. Exactly. So we're looking at least 40, 50,000, if not more. And I always had a goal. I wanted to build, and I don't think I ever got more than 35 or 40. but I called them influencers, but I always wanted to have 100 influencers, you know, and we served a big area in the Chicagoland market and stuff. And so there was plenty of room for all of us. And I'm like, you know, if I got one lead a year from each of the 100, think about how the game changes, because I'm selling 90% of them, 80% of them. And vice versa, how many times I'm going to hand somebody's name out and they're going to get hired just because of the association. So, I think there's massive gold in that example that you just gave us. So I really appreciate that.
You know, the one thing I would say about that, Tom, is that, that everybody likes the idea and says, oh, yeah, I'm going to set that up. I'm gonna, you know, okay, mm-hmm. and they may start it. The problem is, and people get excited about it, and it works, for a month or two. And then, you know, at the plumber's office, you know, Susie forgot to get the things printed up again. And so a week goes by, they're not passing it out anymore. And then the whole thing just falls apart. Okay. And that's why having the monthly group mastermind meeting is really a critically important piece of that puzzle, is because it keeps the whole thing going. All right. That's the biggest danger in doing that, is that it'll work. It works great, but everybody has to do it.
Yeah.
And if they're not, you know, if you're not seeing these people regularly, it's going to stop. It's as simple as that.
Out of sight, out of mind, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's pretend that you're going to take the stage. You have 5 minutes in front of 2,000 contractors, and you get to impart anything you want onto them. I want to give you that opportunity to do that right now.
Not at all.
See, the reason I put you on the spot is because I know what you're going to say is going to be gold, because it's going to come from the heart, man. You know, because it ain't planned out. So what's going to come out is going to be the most important stuff. So that's why I spring this on you. Seriously, like what can you give, you know, that audience of contractors that wants to change their life, wants to change their business, straight from your heart and mind to theirs. Let's have it.
The only thing that really jumps to mind, which I guess is what you're looking for, is that they have to commit to becoming as good at selling as they are at whatever their trade is.
Say that again, because that was good.
I have to commit to becoming as good at selling as they are at their trade.
All right, cool. And then Travis, when you edit this, those of you that know who Travis is, make that echo a couple times, because that's like really cool. All right. echo. So I think you nailed it with that. You know, it's, I know you've seen this with the people you work with. I see this with the people I work with. It's such an awesome, exciting thing for me to see a contractor do exactly what you just said, where they finally say, you know, I've become an expert of swinging this hammer or using this brush or whatever it is. And I really need to put in that same effort and pay my dues and understand the sales game. And when they do, it's so encouraging to see not only how much their life and business change, but how quickly it can.
Yeah.
When they truly commit to being a student of the game like that. So that was good stuff, man.
Well, thanks.
So what did I not ask you that I should have?
I was kind of prepared to talk about anything you wanted to talk about, Tom. So, there are a lot of things. I think maybe the biggest thing that I think, you know, when I say you have to commit to becoming as good at selling as you are at, you know, painting or landscaping or, you know, whatever it is that our listeners do and are good at, that I'm guessing that frightens a lot of people, or they just have no clue how to go about doing that. And The secret to actually making that happen, and I'm coming right back to where I've come to now three or four times during our call today, is you have to create processes. You know, you have to systematize, and you have to develop tools that help you accomplish what it is you want to accomplish. You know, if you're like me, you're really not interested in learning the super psycho, you know, secret insider dark arts, arm twisting sales techniques. You know, that psychologically corner people. So only thing, you know, they have to say yes. And, you know, there's a very rare type of person that can do that and be really authentic about it. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I was, as I said early on in the call. You know, I had to figure out a process that works for me. And the way I did that was I developed tools that really do the selling for me. And that's the secret to kind of making that happen. So I guess what you didn't ask me, I just answered as well. You know, when you commit, become good at selling, well, how do you do that? Okay.
So let's sit on this quote unquote systems processes type thing for a minute. I know years and years ago when I first started hearing stuff like that, like you have to have a sales process, you have to have a marketing system, you have to, you know, whatever, it could be any system in your business, right? A lot of times I'd be like, yeah, I buy in that makes total sense, because there's been other areas of my life in the military and athletics and things like that where I saw the process work and I saw the system work. Where I've seen a lot of people struggle, and where I struggled many years ago, was not believing that I needed a process, but I didn't know where to start to create one. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Like, how do you help a guy who doesn't need to be sold on the fact that he needs a process, but he doesn't know where to start? How detailed does it need to be? And how, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people can get caught up in the weeds.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping to help them avoid a little bit here.
So I guess, well, I mean, let me kind of outline, you know, the basic answer to your question, then maybe give an example. Okay. I would say, well, you know, I would ask myself, what are the problems I have in selling my business? Okay. Or selling myself to prospective clients. So the first thing is, well, nobody seems to be able to tell the difference between me and, you know, the low price guys out there who are flying under the radar.
They all look alike.
Yeah. They all have the same message. You know, maybe not surprisingly, is the guys who are flying under the radar and they seem to be a lot better sales guys than we are. So, you know, than the guys who are kind of honest and reputable, they took more sales classes. And so, you know, you have that to deal with. So the first thing we have to do is we have to establish a tool, or we have to build a tool to help differentiate. Well, what would that be? Okay, well, why don't we tell them what we're all about, you know, how we do what we do to make sure that it comes out really well, that their project turns out, that their expectations are met, and what to watch out for from other guys who might not be doing the work the way we are. Okay, so you could establish a tool like that. Another thing is, well, I get into the sales meeting, and you know, I deliver the proposal, and then they say, well, okay, well, you know, thanks very much, Tom, appreciate it. We'll think about it and let you know. Okay, well, so we got to think about, I got to sit down at our desk, and we got to, you know, close our eyes and think about, well, what could I say when I get hit with that, which I do like every other time I go to somebody's house, that what could I say, and how would I go about countering that concern or that, you know, that statement? Okay, and that's one I recognize every salesperson in the world hates, and I hate getting. Okay, so what can we say that would be all right? And I'll go ahead and tell you what I was able to work out. And this is, by the way, huge. Okay, so this is something that everybody should write down. It took me a really long time, like 3 years of trial and error, to kind of figure out how I was going to deal with that. And the way I did it was, I just I just saw it at the end. Well, they know what they're doing and I know what they're doing. It's just nobody's talking about it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, why not just put all the cards on the table? And so my response to that, when somebody tells me that, they say, oh, well, thanks, Bernie. You know, we'll talk it over and we'll let you know. I say, you know, Tom, when somebody tells me that, it's usually a nice way for them to tell me that they've decided to go a different direction or work with somebody else. And if that's what you've decided, then I'd really appreciate it if you just let me know. Mm-hmm. You won't hurt my feelings. Okay. And that's my response back to that. And then one of two things happens. They either admit that they're going to, you know, that they've decided to go with someone else, at which point I say, well, could you tell me, you know, what were the primary reasons you decided to go with them? And then it's usually price, and then we can talk about price objections. Or, you know, maybe they'll say, well, you know, you're telling me it's going to be, you know, $8,000 to paint my home. And I guess I was thinking it would be more like, you know, $5,000. And I just didn't realize how much it was going to cost. And so now we can work with them on budget issues and stuff like that, you know. So you know, but the bottom line, it's like, it's so disarming and honest and authentic that it just opens the floodgates and you find out the truth. Mm-hmm. And then you can deal with the truth instead of, you know, ending up in follow-up hell, which is where we all end up.
Yeah.
Usually when we hear that, right? So you have to kind of put yourself in a position and figure out, well, where exactly is my sales process falling apart? You know, I mean, when I deliver the proposal, am I getting put off and what do I do about that? You know, is everybody beating me up about price? Well, you know, maybe we have to demonstrate our excellence and our processes and the fact that we're superior and the result we're going to give them before we deliver our price to kind of knock out those low price proposals. So I do have a process for establishing tools, and I don't want this to go too long, so I'm going to rush through this a little bit, but basically I have three goals when I think about creating a tool, okay, and I'm talking about sales tools. So one is to establish goals for the tool, and then to develop the tool, and then to implement the tool. Okay, so that's pretty easy. So let's take, for instance, we talked about earlier, an incoming call that you want to talk to somebody, okay, and kind of get some information. So we establish calls, and I'm kind of going from the top of my head, Tom. So
no, that's
this
cool.
Might be a little,
that's all good.
But the goals we have for an incoming call is, first of all, we want to create a positive feeling for the caller and present a professional image. All right, we want to gather their information and get some information at least about the scope of the project, and we want to weed out price shoppers, okay? And obviously, we want to schedule a meeting for somebody to go out, okay? So we develop, first of all, we want to create a positive feeling and present a professional image. So you write a quick script. Whoever's answering the phone, good morning, thanks for calling Revolutionary Painting. This is Lori, how can I help you? Okay, so that's... You've created a positive feeling and presented a professional image. That's pretty good. All right. So,
by the way, Lori, you sound like a dude.
This is Bernie. How can I help?
All right, man.
We're writing a script for somebody else.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm a squirrel. All right.
And then we want to gather contact information and scope of the project. So you set her up with some questions, you know, with a table, a chart, you know, some kind of tool to gather their contact information and what exactly they have in mind as far as the job is concerned. Okay, so that accomplishes goal number two. Goal number three is we want to weed out price shoppers. So the way we do this, I like to ask questions, okay? How did you find out about us? Because sometimes lead source, you know, if it came from Home Advisor, Angie's List versus a referral, that's going to give you a real good sense as to how price sensitive they're going to be.
Right.
Are we the first painting company you've reached? All right, so that'll give you an idea. You know, that's kind of a sideways way of asking how many people are you planning to call, all right? Or you could say, well, how much research have you done so far as colors and finishes? You know, all of those sorts of questions give you a really good sense as to where the prospect is and you know, how competitive this situation is going to be. And then if they say, you know, when you asked, are we the first painting company? Oh, no, you're the fifth one I've talked to. Okay. Well, now you might want to build into your little script something that allows you to say, well, you know, Mr. Smith, thanks so much for contacting us. I'm really not sure that we're the right painter for you. Maybe, you know, you might want to consider, you know, ABC Painting across town. I think you'll find they'll be able to help you better. So,
yeah. Or is there a reason you haven't hired one of them yet?
That's a good one.
You know, okay. And you know, maybe they couldn't get a hold of them. Maybe nobody called them back. Maybe they were all, well, we thought they were all too expensive or something. Well, then obviously then you go, well, we're not a good fit. So,
Well, I mean, yeah, if they say everybody was too expensive, you can get a sense of their budget. And, mm-hmm. But then, I mean, you're going to be more expensive if you're following, you know, your advice. Yeah. If you follow Tom Reber's advice, you're going to be more expensive than the other guys anyway. So, and then, you know, I would say, you know, you always want to think about, hey, you know, let's say, and I know this happens a lot, particularly with painters and roofers and others sort of in those, is, you know, well, can't you just give me an idea what it's going to be, you know, on the phone call? So you want to put a script together that says, hey, you know, I understand that you'd like to give me an estimate, but we really can't give you even a good idea of without first visiting your home. There are just too many variables. And really, you know, in fact, you should steer away from any company that gives you a price on the phone because, you know, they really have no idea how much it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to take 30 minutes and we'd really prefer to come out and give you a price that you can really count on. So, or an estimate or a pricing promise.
Okay.
And then the last thing, you know, you want to schedule a meeting. So, you know, you use, you know, Mr. Smith, Bernie's available to come out to your home on Tuesday afternoon or Thursday morning. Which one's better for you? So, and that's it. So you established your goals, and then you addressed your goals for that tool. And that's exactly how we create our tools. Is, yeah. You know, it's really not all that hard if you just sit down and you know, work yourself through what is a pretty simple process.
So, you know, as you're sharing this, you know, what it really comes down to is choosing to be deliberate about setting some time aside and really thinking through your business, thinking through the things that you want to happen. And it's like drawing up a play in the sand, you know, hey, you're going to run over here and you're going to be wide open, you know?
Right. And I would add to that.
Yeah.
I would add to that, you know, figuring out where the hurdles are, you know, where does the process fall off the tracks and what can we do about it?
Yeah. When I'm losing this stuff, where do I lose it? And, you know, but what you're sharing, you know, is really going to, and I'm bringing attention to this because I see this a lot, is we're so used to moving at this fast pace in our industries, and we rarely take time to slow down and do some of that mental grinding work that's going to help us to be successful down the road.
Yeah.
And so if you're listening to this, you know, take what Bernie just shared about how to create that sort of a process in anything in your business and use that as a great outline. I appreciate you sharing that because that's good stuff. It's going to force people to really be deliberate and, you know, instead of just kind of winging it every time.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
So Bernie, how, if somebody's listening to this, they want to get in touch with you. They want to learn more about what you do and how you help and things like that. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, one of two things. They can either email me, and my email is BHEER@BernieHeer.com, or they can call, and I got my toll free number is 800-346-4015.
Good deal. What's your favorite social media platform? For you.
You mean my only social media platform?
Yeah. What's that?
I mean, I am on Facebook, but okay. I'm not, you know, that. So yeah.
All right. That's cool. Just curious. Well, this is awesome, man. I'm glad we made this happen. And it's been a long time coming, and I appreciate the time that you spent. And I know you added a lot of value to the people listening, and that was the goal here, man. And you know, I hope everyone walks away from this call really, you know, taking to heart your message that you would share, you know, if you had 5 minutes, you know, about, you know, becoming an expert at the sales game, just like you'd be an expert at the actual craft that you do. So, you know, it means a lot to me that you'd be here, man. I appreciate it. And for those of you listening, you got anything else you want to add, Bernie, before I sign us off here? Or you?
No, just I feel the same way you do. I really appreciate your inviting me onto the podcast, and I'm really glad we had a chance to do it. So
awesome, man. Well, guys, none of this helps you unless you go implement it. So take something you heard today from Bernie and put it into practice. Find a way to get better and be a stronger contractor. We will see you guys next time on the Strongpreneur Podcast. Travis, bring in them guitars. Hasta la bye-bye.